And so I said, we have to think outside the box. We have to do shit that hasn't been done before. And not trying to sit here and reinvent the wheels. I'm just trying to put prettier rims on a fucking tire. That's all I'm trying to do, right? Think about when spinners came out and everyone had fucking spinners in the car. That's what I'm trying to fucking do. But I want to do that where spinners last for a fucking lifetime, right? Where everyone pulls up to a red light and those spinners are still spinning like 2050.
Welcome to episode one of the I Digress podcast. I'm Roel Chanel, and I'll be bringing you unknown stories of people getting shit done. I'm really excited for you to get to know the Howl Monk. But before we do, I'm going to digress for a moment on the topic of tattoo discrimination. Whether you have a tattoo or not, you likely have an opinion about tattoos. For progressive-minded folks, tattoos are seen as a way to express yourself and likely hold little to no negative stigma. But for white-collar corporate America and more traditional-minded folks, tattoos are still seen as a character flaw and at the very least as a sign of poor judgment. I came across a Business Insider article while prepping this episode, and it cited multiple studies done on the perception of tattoos. One of the studies focused on a group of HR managers, and it was disheartening to say the least. Over one-third of them said that tattoos were a career-limiting feature. And I'd have to say that that number is probably a little bit low, because I don't think all of the people who were surveyed would actually admit it either to themselves or to the person conducting the survey. And think about it, this sounds a bit hypocritical of the HR managers that were interviewed, because they're really supposed to be there or in that part of the business world that tries to protect people from discrimination. And as one of nearly 45 million Americans who rock at least one tattoo, that's bullshit. But I get it. And that's for a number of reasons. First, people have a certain image of what the person that they should hire looks like. Whether we like that or not, it's just the real world. Second, I chose to get my tattoos. I love them and they all mean something, as do yours. However, others have no clue the story behind them until I have the chance to tell them. So how can I expect them to give a shit? The third reason, and this one is probably the biggest, is the simple fact that there are no laws in place to protect against tattoo discrimination. I think this will probably change because there's so many millennials that rock tattoos, but until this happens, it's gonna be hard to force society to change. And the last point is that for the generations that do carry a bias, it's because they associate tattoos with bikers and thugs, whether that's fair or not. They don't associate it with the millennials who are sitting there confused as to why their grandparents don't like their sleeves. Now, earlier I said I get it. What I get is that perception is reality, whether we like it or not. In order to change things, we have to control the narrative. We need to understand that corporate America and society are willing to change, and it may not be at the pace that we want it to change. So we have to deal with that. But if we recognize this willingness and we decide not to be indignant when we're confronted by this bias, I think it'll go a long way. Instead of the old, you know, my body, my right argument, we need to show that tattoos can be an indicator of passion, conviction, and creativity. What if one day we're able to change the narrative and have companies begin to see that tattoos could be an intangible, a way to potentially identify a creative or innovative person that a resume simply can't communicate. Now again, discrimination is bullshit no matter how you cut it, I get it. But control what you can control. Own the fact that you love the creative expression that your ink represents, and use your tattoos as a way of telling your compelling non-traditional story. Maybe this will begin to change the narrative, and maybe it won't. Either way, we made the decision to get them, so we have to own it. I just prefer to turn my story into a positive one versus letting other people dictate and deem them as a flaw. With that said, let's get going. Even though I consider today's guest a friend, I've actually never met him. In fact, we only spoke for the first time just before we recorded this session. We met on Instagram probably about 7 years ago, and that was mostly because, for one, he had a great handle. It was Mr. Cake Bread, which, for anyone who knows wine, cake bread is one of those first ones that you kind of latch onto as a sign of quality. So that was fun. And then the other reason is he liked to show off the bottles he was drinking. So did I. So we had that instant bond. Now, come to find out that the man behind the bottles was a fascinating character with a real and raw story. Let's hear from him.
I'm the Howl Monk, also known as Michael Nguyen, Director of Marketing for Red Cat Vineyards, located in Howl Mountain, Napa Valley, California. And we are a small winery that produces about 280 cases of estate Howl Mountain Cabernet. I am a California native, born in San Jose, California, and I'm here to kick ass with my homie.
The Howl Monk. I mean, seriously. Is that not the slickest nickname ever?
Well, the Howl Monk, funny enough, was a handle given to me by my boss when I, Tom Altimus, who's the owner of Red Cap Vineyards, when I was first hired at Red Cap. And I went by a different username early in my blogging days, quote-unquote blogging days. I used to go by Mr. Cake Bread. So when I joined Red Cap Vineyards, everyone's like, you need to change your username. Can't be representing another winery. And my boss was like, hey, man, the Howl Monk. And I'm like, that's clever, man. I'm like, I'm a bald guy. We're in Howl Mountain. But the whole Howl Monk thing really unfolded as someone who brought a community together, right?
In hindsight, he killed the community building game. But early on, it was really just him trying to figure out what the hell Instagram's potential was.
You know, when I first started this, I didn't know where this was going. We're talking about 7 years ago on Instagram. And you know, we always thought it was just fucking taking pictures, throwing cool ass filters on there, and then sending it off. At that time, I didn't even know what the fuck a hashtag was, right? I didn't know that this thing was, you know, a depository for pictures or a happy meeting for, you know, for a way for you to meet people who had things in common with you. And so I was still understanding everything and the platform itself. And at the time, I was working in technology. So I was already a big geek at the end of the day, but I just saw something bigger than just taking pictures and, you know, putting on cool hashtags and filters to it. And it just happened to be this community that was driving it. And at this point, I wasn't even with Red Cap yet. It was just me as a user, as a consumer. I can't even call myself a blogger at the end of the day. I don't really actually blog anything. I'm actually just snapping pictures of what I'm drinking and showing everyone I'm a drunk, right? A professional drunk. And that could probably outdrink any Irish person. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was all about building a community amongst each other and really sharing tips, right? I mean, if you and I drank the same wines and you told me, hey, Michael, drink, you know, ABC Vineyards, I would take your advice on it because you and I have a similar palate based off of what we drink.
You can hear the evolution of thought from, oh, this is cool, to, damn, this could be big. And that is a big part of Michael's story. But before we can appreciate that, let's go back in time just a little bit.
Before Red Cap Vineyards, you know, I was working for a Fortune 500 company in Silicon Valley. And at that point, I thought my life was set. I thought I really was going to retire at this Fortune 500 company, and I was making good money, you know, traveling the world. And I just thought I had life figured out at 20, right? And I was in sales, and I'm so thankful for that opportunity, which led me to this opportunity at Red Cap Vineyards. But I was in sales and really just learning things out and feeling things out there. And fortunately for me, my first manager was a big wine lover, and I remember being 20, only at 20 actually, man, and being at a Christmas party, company's Christmas party, and a bottle of wine was sitting there, right? And so I was like, well, you know, I'm going to try to fit in, right, and just drink a glass of wine, not knowing how to hold my wine, not even knowing how to pour the wine, right? And after that first glass of wine, just fell in love, man. And, you know, since I was in sales, I was constantly taking folks out. And so when I fell in love with wine at my Christmas party, I said, hey, you know what? I'm going to take folks up to Napa Valley and, you know, and all my customers from out of town anyways. And so I was like, well, you know, what's a great way to win a sales, right? My manager always said, if you can't win their heart, you can always win their liver, right? And I still stand by that statement. But, you know, I would always constantly take up folks to Napa Valley and, you know, show them a good time and, you know, show them around California, you know, no difference than if anyone came into your house, you know, you want to make them feel warm and welcomed. And from there, I mean, it was like one of those things where I'm like, wow, this, you know, I love the concept of this Napa Valley, that the people, the lifestyle, the living style here, it's beautiful, it's organic. It was a complete opposite from my tech job, right? We're talking about routers and switches into grapevines, right, and soil, right? And it was such a dramatic difference, but it was such an organic feeling. You know, they had that cliche saying, it's like, you know, do what you love and it doesn't ever feel like work, right? And every time I was in Napa Valley, it made me feel happy, and I was excited to be up there. And I was like, how do you bottle up this feeling and make this feeling permanent? But, you know, you look around and, you know, tech jobs obviously are going to pay you easily six digits, you know, and a great lifestyle to live. You know, we're Napa Valley. It's not about making a crap load of money unless you're a vintner, right? But I don't think people in Napa Valley aim for, you know, to make, you know, to bank out. I mean, no one who starts a winery or, you know, has a wine out there, started their business and goes off and says, hey, the first year I'm going to make, you know, $500K, you know, you're going to end up losing money before you even make money. And what I mean by that is that you have to plant your vines, right, which could take up to 3 years before you get grapes. There's a, you know, barrel time, which could be anywhere from 24 to 36 months, and then bottle time, right? So you're talking about the first 5 years of business, you're not making crap money, right? And I think people in the business do it because of the passion and the love. And, of course, attempting to make the best product they can possibly make with the weather pattern, soil, et cetera.
And that, my friends, was the start of an intense love affair.
I was going up there like once a week. And just became addicted to the place, man. And I really got to build a lot of great relationships with a few wineries out there as a consumer. And as I progressed into my mid 20s, Instagram came out, and this was before they went public too, man. And I downloaded the app, and I noticed, you know, once again, from that transition of the community and just taking pictures, that there was a potential there for Napa Valley to capitalize on this. And I kept telling wineries 7 years ago about this. Funny enough, I mean, I was telling wineries about this 7 years ago. I said, hey, guys, like, there's this cool new app online, you know, on your phone. And, you know, you take pictures and you share it to the world if you want. You just got to kind of find your own customers. But I started going up there so much, I just really fell in love with it. And I'm like, man, I wish this could be my job. And getting into it, I'm like, hey, you know, like, I remember, like, approaching wineries, like, I'll do anything, scrub toilets, like, just to get my foot in the door, because I had no background in wine. I had no background in wine, and all my background was in tech. And, you know, people obviously, I think, I'm sure wineries thought it was a joke, and I'm sure they hear it a million times from customers, like, oh, you know, I'll do anything for the winery, I'll harvest with you guys, or I'll sweep the place. And wineries hear it all the time, and they probably think it's just cute and funny, but I was persistent, man, and so from a transition perspective, it was tough. I mean, I was young, right? I had a baby face, filled with tattoos from top to bottom, right? So I already looked like this crazy, like, outsider in this, like, very fancy little Napa Valley, trying to get into this world, and then trying to tell businesses I could help them shift their business and move it forward as the world evolves in technology. I mean, no one's going to give you the fucking time or day, right? Like, no owner, no vintner, like, no winemaker is going to give you any time or day. They probably gonna think you're fucking crazy or you're fucking drunk.
I'm not sure if you caught two things he said there. First, he was persistent as fuck. There's no denying that. Second, we heard the first mention that tattoos played a role in whether Michael was taken seriously. I digress. So when did Michael's luck begin to turn?
It was Cakeford Sellers who invited me to this Howl Mountain tasting out in San Francisco. And this Howl Mountain tasting is pretty much a gathering of, like, all the Howl Mountain wineries. And I get to San Francisco, and we get to the spot where they're doing the pourings and tastings. And it's based in a U-shape. And, of course, my dumbass, you know, when I'm all young, you know, I was like, oh, let me just start from A and finish off at Z. Well, by the time I got to, like, D, like, I was already feeling it, right? I mean, that's a lot of wineries between A and D. And every winery was pouring, like, four different glasses of wine. So I was like, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to skip a few tables. I'm going to skip the ones I've already drank before. So I started skipping tables.
And that's when a certain somebody ran out of wine. But imagine if he hadn't run out of wine.
You know, Tom, now who's my boss, is just standing there, and I walk up to him. I'm like, hey, do you mind if I grab a sip? And he's like, I'm out of wine. Here's my business card. Super, like, East Coast Philly personality, right? And I'm like, the fuck, right? I'm like, whatever, man. Grab your business card. Add it to all my other business cards. and get home. And once again, I have my sales, some sales guys out. So I'm like, I take them up to Napa Valley, show them a good time. So I dump all these business cards out my bed. And the one business card that stuck out was the Red Cap Vineyards business card, because it's not a rectangle shape. It's actually a barrel shape. So I'm like, hey, this looks a little jazzy and shit. I'm like, let me just give these folks a call. And so I call them. I bring my sales guys up. As I'm up there, I start talking to Tom about the wines and technology. And I said, hey, man, you ever hear this thing about called Instagram? And he's like, don't know what the fuck that is. He's like, I'm a fucking farmer, man. That's all I do is I farm and I fucking make wine. I sell wine. I'm like, well, shit, I think I see something happening right now with, this technology, social media. And he's like, I don't have time for it, man. Funny enough, when I met Tom, this guy had a fucking star tack, man. Like, he had to fucking pull up the antenna, right, to, like, just have a conversation with this guy. And I'm like, gosh, I'm like, Tom, like, I'll do anything for you, man. Like, you want me to, rake all the leaves at your house, man? And you want me to sweep your house, wash dishes, wash glasses, like, scrub toilets? It was that whole pitch again. And I'm like, I promise you, man, like, there's something huge happening right now with Instagram, and I think we're catching this wave early. At this point, when I had proposed this to Tom, no winery was on Instagram yet. Fortunately, Instagram someone out there allows you to see when all the wineries signed on Instagram, and Red Cap was one of the first three to be signed on. The other two were Whitehall Lane and Jordan on Sonoma. But, he didn't think too much of it. He's like, whatever, man. He's like, I don't really have time for it. And I'm like, dude, I'll do it for you for free. I won't disturb your family. I'm going to run in here, just grab a few pictures of the vineyard, grab a few pictures of your wines, and I'll return the bottles back, the corks back, or whatever, and I'll get out of your hair. And he's like, all right, sure. He's like, as long as you don't mess up my brand. I'm like, hey, man, I'm in sales. I get this whole thing, right? Like, I'm good. And so I get home, and I grab a few pictures, and I start posting on, on Instagram and the whole nine. And he starts getting calls. Hey, I saw you guys on Instagram. You guys are available for tastings or visits. And he just started noticing that a little bit more. And and from there, he called me up. He's like, yo, dude, I'm going to grab you now before someone else does.
Finally, this, my friends, is what one of my favorite authors and hopefully a future I Digress guest, Shane Snow, calls a hack, or utilizing lateral thinking to accelerate your ascent up the ladder. It's awesome. Think about it. Michael was now the director of marketing for Red Cap, yet he had no marketing experience and he had never worked in the wine industry. He hacked the traditional job ascension by looking at things differently. You gotta love it, and we need to see more of that. Now, one of the things I wanted to get back to, just because it was still kind of lingering in the back of my head, was his comment about the tattoos from earlier. So I simply asked, what did he attribute his difficulty in breaking through to?
Probably my biggest obstacle all in Napa Valley were my tattoos. Funny enough, and I'm inked down from my fingertips, my sleeves, my legs, my back, my front, and my chest, and that was the biggest challenge transitioning into Napa Valley. And you would think that was tough for me to be working in technology with tattoo, and it wasn't. Funny enough, it was Napa Valley that gave me a hard time. Let's call out a few of them. It's Napa Valley is an old place, man. It's not like it has high buildings with a bunch of Wi-Fi around the city. It's still some of the original houses and architecture and infrastructure still sits there today. And it was a very old school mentality. The place was just very old school. It's such a tough story to say. It was like, talk about feeling discriminated for the first time, right? We all hear the jokes like, oh, Asian people, you all drive slow, right? Like, that's not discrimination. That's just pure fucking racism, right? Or pure, I wouldn't call it racism, but more like a stereotype. But I got the stereotypes off of tattoos, being in Napa Valley, and then also being Asian American as well. And it was weird. No one gave me a time or day. I would walk into some wineries and didn't get service. And it sucked. It blows, man, just to not be treated like a human being just because of the way you look. And you would think something like that would defer you to pursue a dream, because that is a little harsh on your ego. It's harsh on, you know, just your help me think of the word here, man. It's harsh on my insecurities and the whole nine. But you know, I had a mentor. He said, just keep going at it. You know, create your own lane. If no one's gonna put you in a lane, create your own lane. And it's like, you know, you hear that saying, it's like, how do you turn your negatives into pros and like that? And it's true. You can turn any negative into a pro right away. And what I said was, well, you know, who's going to give me the chance? Who's going to give me the time? I look like this. No one's even bothering to talk to me, you know? And I thought about it. I was like, well, you know what? If I'm all inked up, I happen to look like the only person. And I was blowing, by the way, like, I have so much ink, I'm blowing out every fucking chef. I mean, I'm the only one who looks like me in Napa Valley, let's put it that way. Not because I'm Asian, but because I have all my tattoos. Then the Asian part's another story, but that's neither here or there. But I said, well, you're right. Why can't I create my own lane, right? Why can't I come in this industry, shake it up a little bit, and have someone who has a younger face, someone who represents a different community, and someone who looks like me, who can and has a fan base that relates and looks like me, fall in love with wine? How do you create that, right? Now, you rewind back a little bit, and you go, okay, well, I have a community on my back who has my back, which is Instagram. Then there's me. Slowly, as this is starting to emerge, you see a few wineries pop up on Instagram. I have to get my name popped out there. Didn't think too much of it at the time, but people start to recognize you, right? You're the one that stands out of the whole entire valley at this point, right? And people are now, it's funny enough, like, the same people who I wanted to have meetings with to talk about social media back in the days are now calling me to try to have meetings with me.
Michael experienced frustrations that many of us will never face, and he still carries some resentment, which is understandable. But it's the second part of what he just said that really struck me, because he really had a positive attitude about all of it. He said, "You're the only one who stands out in the whole valley." What a great way to look at it. Are you ready for this? Because it's another book reference, my bad. But Michael is David in Malcolm Gladwell's David and Goliath. It's a book that looks at underdogs, misfits, and how they use their perceived weaknesses as strengths to battle giants. This mindset has allowed him to become a fresh, non-pretentious face of the changing valley, which he has leveraged for personal success.
I know we've said it a million times, and we've heard it a million times. You know, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you truly can. And I feel like sometimes I'm a use case for that, right? Like, you just can't. I mean, at the end of the day, I have a heavy sales, heavy marketing background. We're talking 15 years here, right? And I'm still young. That's the funny thing. And so there's still that hunger and that innovation, innovative side of me that kicks in. But you really can't judge a book by its cover. At the end of the day, you know, you don't know what you've been missing out. And luckily for Tom, he happened to give me the opportunity, the chance, and he let me run with it. You know, he truly let me run with his business after he figured out that, hey, you know, I was onto something. You know, he let me run his marketing, his sales team, the vision for the brand itself, and really driving it, not with my personality, but more of me adding my personality along with their personality and driving their vision, right? But really just breaking out of monotony of things and going, hey, we can drive business differently today. You know, we don't have to be this standard, like, you know, fluffy winery. We can be down to earth and relate to people, normal, quote unquote, normal people, and really have a kick-ass time, right? And create memories, everlasting memories, and being very genuine about this too, right? Create memories where, you know, people can look back and every time they open a bottle of Red Cap, they feel like they're sitting back, you know, on our patio shooting the shit with us, or just, you know, any experience they had at Red Cap Vineyard in general. But I said, guys, we can create something that today no one else has created yet, and let's be the leaders to this. You know, let's drive this forward, and let's pave the way for this. Right? My boss gave me my own lane, and I, in return, I gave my boss his own separate lane. Right? And I truly think that's where we sit today, is our own separate lane.
Michael really approached his job at Red Cap with an entrepreneurial vigor that was non-traditional and innovative. So what next? I wanted to find out from him, to what did he attribute his success, And how is he trying to perpetuate that success amongst others?
And you shit it out and you call it a day, right? But, you know, I wanted to be innovative. And I didn't want, you know, it's funny because innovation comes naturally to people. It should, right? It's a thought. It's just an idea. It's no difference than anyone else's idea out there. You have an idea and you're going to go for it, right? The problem here is I'm sure there's a lot of people that are innovative but too afraid to act on their idea because they're too afraid to fail. And I wanted to be the leader to fail. Plus, not, that sounds really shitty, but I wanted to be the guy who goes, hey, I'm going to fail, figure out the mistakes, and then tell you guys about it, right? And figure out, you know, when we're doing, you know, innovative projects such as, you know, grabbing community together, what are the rights and wrongs, you know, or bringing social media or bring social media out to wineries, what are the right or wrongs with that? And I wanted to be the leader to go, hey, this is how we should do things. Right. And I think aside from all the innovation itself and going, hey, you know, how do we think outside the box? You know, how do we make this fun? I think a lot of people forget, like, you got to keep the fun side apart to it, right? I mean, this isn't like some serious, like, you know, uptight, you know, I got to stick up my ass type of thing. But how do you keep this fun and friendly and still be innovative? And so when we started building the communities, that was my first phase to go, hey, let me gather this community together. You know, when I started to work with Napa Valley, I said, I just brought a community of consumers together. Why can't I do that with Napa Valley? When I thought about the concept of going, hey, I want to grow just not the community, but I want to grow wineries together and I want to build alliances and partnerships with each other. But who the fuck's going to want to do that? And it's no different than the story I just told you with Target and Walmart. It's like, hey, guys, you know, we're all in Howl Mountain together, first and foremost, you know, and it's not like anyone drinks any one wine. How do we win together? You know, how do I refer to you? Like, can I refer folks to you? How do I just keep the money and all the love in the same circle? Right. And I went back to the wine and I said, guys, you know, we need to do cool shit and we need to think outside the box and we need to, you know, just really do shit that's been unheard of that has been done in Napa Valley. If you're gonna put a stake in the ground, you're gonna make sure it's a fucking fat ass stake, right? And so I said, we have to think outside the box. We have to do shit that hasn't been done before. And I'm not trying to sit here and reinvent the wheels. I'm just trying to put prettier rims on a fucking tire. And that's all I'm trying to do, right? Think about when spinners came out and everyone had fucking spinners in the car. That's what I'm trying to fucking do. But I want to do that where spinners last for a fucking lifetime, right? Where everyone pulls up to a red light and those spinners are still spinning like 2050, right? And that was my goal to be, I want to leave a mark. This is not a popularity contest. I'm not trying to be the most famous person. I'm obviously not. I only got 8,000 followers. So I'm not sitting there like popping off on 50,000 followers. But I'm going to make sure that you fucking know who I am at the end of the day. I will make sure that the community, just not in Napa Valley, but worldwide, knows what the fuck we're doing because I am representing not just Howl Mountain. I represent all of Napa Valley as well. I want to make sure that folks know that there is a fucking monster sitting out there that goes by the Howl Monk, and I'm ready to drive the innovation for this. So, you know, we get back, and I tell the wineries, I'm like, guys, we really just, you know what we should fucking do? We should throw a fucking party together, all four wineries, Retro Cellars, Robert Craig, Red Cap Vineyards, Robert Craig, Red Cap, Robert Foley, and Retro Cellars. I hope I didn't repeat any of those over again. But I said, hey, guys, let's get together and let's just throw a fucking party and invite Instagram folks out. Once again, like earlier, like I stated, things don't really come together until you physically meet each other. It's this virtual and physical world that no one understands. And I wanted to be that bridge for it, pretty much. Like, you know, that's all. I wanted to be a bridge. I wanted to be the platform for it. I wanted to be the platform for where I took one side and connected it to one side, right, and gave it power. So all the four wineries got together. I gave them a huge pitch. I'm like, guys, we do this together. We each invite our own consumers out or our own customers out. each of us have to take a loss. That means that I'm pretty much giving you my customer and you're giving me yours, right? But we don't lose anything. If anything, we gain. Each of us gain something. Like, you just got to gain off a sale. I just gain off of your sale. Now our alliances are tighter. I just gave you money. You just gave me money, right?
Collaboration, not competing, for the common good. It's a brilliant idea, especially since wine is simply a commodity. You can get it from anywhere. Mike's idea was simple. Create an experience where our customers will buy our wine. But because they want to drink wines from other wineries, we'll make sure that we support you so that they'll buy yours. We just ask that you do the same for us. It's brilliant and it works. If you follow the different wineries of Howell Mountain, you will see a ton of cross-pollination. So what's next for Michael? What's important to him going forward?
Stay innovative. Push that needle. And those are going to be my two biggest things. And it's going to be driven around, obviously, our community, drawing a bigger, tight-knit community. The community's gotten so much bigger, man. It's gotten really big. Of course, helping my family and our brand out, and really building that, really building our presence. But me personally, really just driving a tighter niche community. I want to embrace the new bloggers or the next person that comes after me. And, you know, I have a few mentors now. I have a few princesses now that I mentor. We're talking about legacy earlier, what you want to leave behind. If you want to leave something behind, you have to pass it down. And, you know, it's like a campfire story. You know, I used, you know, the Howell Monk guy, you know, he taught me this, and your name will always be mentioned and stay relevant in that sense. And you have to kind of just teach the next generation, the next batch. My biggest goal now, my next biggest goal, aside from being innovative and pushing that needle for our brand and our community, is to watch someone else grow, you know, and watch someone give someone that opportunity to get into the wine business that didn't have, you know, that they can't get into the wine business because of their background, but they have that passion, that love, that fire. And that was my biggest thing. And during the business, you know, everyone said you needed to get a mentor, an apprentice. And, you know, from an ego perspective, my ego perspective, I'm like, I don't want an apprentice. I want to be the guy who owns this shit. But it is important that, you know, you pass on your knowledge to the next person and have them push the needle forward as well. You know, my apprentice is only 25, and you know, I look back and I started my career at 25, and I can see his hunger for the business, and it's 10 times stronger than mine's. And a part of me feels afraid, and there's another part of me that feels really proud that he's my mentor. He's my apprentice, right? But he has a younger audience, and when I first started the call, I said, you know, how do we make wine sexy again, and how do we keep, you know, it relevant and on the whole nine? You know, my apprentice is that next part of it. He's going to move that needle forward. You know, I've already moved it forward X amount, and he's going to take that baton and run forward with it after that.
Unrelenting passion and curiosity, a deep sense of community, giving back to progress things forward. Not bad for an Asian tattoo kid who doesn't belong. What I love about Michael's story is he didn't say, fuck you, and get discouraged and walk away. It would have been way too easy to do that. Instead, he said, fuck you, he stayed persistent, and is helping to change the game. Word of advice, don't judge a book by its cover. This episode of I Digress is produced by Sante DiOlio. Original music by Bandana Biker Boy. A special thanks to Tom and Desiree Altimus of Red Cap Vineyards for allowing Michael to speak freely. Thank you, Michael, for allowing yourself to be vulnerable on a recorded line. I'm Arul Chanel. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud. It would really help.